Chapter 52. A Number of Discussions. On Monday, Genkai passed out a thick scroll to each student in the class. "I don't ordinarily support such nonsense. If you don't remember now, you're certainly not going to remember under attack," she announced as the last scrolls were distributed. "But this is a study guide. We will be spending the remainder of the year in review."
Joy, Harry thought. All of 5 weeks before the owls, Hermione's going to throw a fit.
He opened his scroll, discovering a long outline of notes in a painfully tiny script. Defense Owl Review. Year 1. What are the dark arts? Year 2. The inanimate dark. Year 3. Dark beasts. Year 4. Dark practices. Year 5. The sentient dark. He looked up from his scroll as Genkai tapped the board. The first two lines scribbled themselves onto the board, and Genkai began to speak.
"The dark arts, as defined by the Ministry, are those arts that..."
Harry tuned out. He had a very good idea of what the dark arts were. Hadn't he lived it for the past 5 years? Idly browsing through the guide, he worked to recall the lectures of the first year. A hex was not a charm, a jinx was not a hex. Only charms had the complexity to be classified into light and dark. Hexes were darker than jinxes. Painful transfigurations were dark. A proper transfiguration automatically deadened the pain nerves during the shift. Potions requiring human tissues of any sort were dark. Potions that caused pain, death, or injury were dark. Anything that caused death, injury, or controlled the victim was dark. Any magical plant or creature willing to eat a wizard was dark. Harry could almost recall Quirrell pacing nervously in Genkai's place, with that purple turban bobbing when he emphasized a point, the stutter firmly undermining any ability to stay patient and actually listen. He'd written notes to Ron, and later Hermione, drawing Quidditch games and getting more out of Hermione's written comments of, "Pay attention, he just said that," than he did from the lectures themselves. Quirrell, what a weird time to remember him. Or maybe not. The end of the year was coming. He spent the rest of the class quietly immersed in thought, and when the bell rang, piled his study guide and unused writing supplies into his bag in silence. "That took bloody forever," Ron griped, as they spilled out into the corridor beyond the rest of the students. "I'd forgotten how absolutely dull first year was." Hermione didn't look up from her study guide.
"It was very informative, Ron. Though I hadn't realized just how very simplistic it was."
Harry pretended to pay attention, though Ron looked out over the crowd as if looking for someone, as she added,
"Just look! All these rules about classifications and absolutely no mention of why."
"Yeah, Hermione, very interesting," Ron said, patting her on the shoulder, attention pinned to someone near the tail end of the crowd. "I'll be back in a few." Harry blinked. "What? Where are you?"
"I'll catch up," Ron said, veering away.
Harry and Hermione stared as he tapped Kurama on the shoulder. Kurama glanced up at him in open curiosity, with a hint of surprise, but simply paused in the middle of the hallway. Ron pointed the other direction, and Kurama allowed himself to be escorted away. The last thing Harry heard before they left earshot was Ron, in a less than friendly voice, saying, "I think we need to talk." To say Kurama was surprised at Ron's request was stretching things a bit. As he let Ron direct him away from their housemates, he racked his memory for the last time he'd actually spoken to the boy. Not counting Genkai's test, since he didn't know it was me. The hospital? But I was speaking more to both of Harry's friends at the time. I think I may have said hi on Setsubun. New Year's? Christmas? None of those seemed right. Inari, I don't think I've spoken him, or rather, he to me, since the train. Ron stopped near the end of the corridor. Kurama followed his lead, waiting for the Gryffindor to start. It didn't take long.
"Last week," Ron began, voice tense with concentrated non-hostility, "I found Hiei in the bathroom looking like he'd gone 10 rounds with a manticore and lost."
Kurama carefully didn't laugh at the ridiculous of Hiei losing to a mere manticore.
"And?" he asked neutrally.
Ron glowered.
"And I sort of guessed that you'd done it. He didn't say it wasn't, so what the bloody hell were you thinking?"
"Well," Kurama drew the word out, dropping his gaze to the floor and calculating furiously. If he denied, if he lied, if he told the truth, but how much?
"I wasn't thinking, that is."
"So you really did beat the crap out of him," Ron growled. "I thought he was your friend. He was bloody limping, and you...
"I wasn't exactly unscathed either, Weasley," Kurama murmured. "But how much to tell? Hiei's fire is far less versatile than my plants. He wasn't willing to risk killing me, but he refused to leave me in pain."
That brought Ron up short, confusion splashing onto his face like cold water.
"Pain?" he echoed.
"There are side effects to core magic. Most are simple, little things. If you took the challenge from Yusuke's life or gave Kuwabara nothing to protect, they'd just waste away. They don't even realize it, and it can't be used against them, really."
Kurama offered a wan smile. "Mine's somewhat more complicated, and I'd rather not say more."
Ron stared, agape for a long moment. Then his mouth snapped shut. He nodded slowly.
"If you're lying, I'm not. If you're lying, I'll hit you with every jinx my brother's invented and then some."
"Thank you, thank you. Thank you for not being Hermione and plaguing me with questions," Kurama thought, nodding expressionlessly.
"I will keep that in mind."
"Good." The next week, amid a flurry of studying, spearheaded by Hermione, McGonagall began calling fifth years into her office one at a time. Harry's appointment got him out of divination.
"Sit down, Mr. Potter," Professor McGonagall said, gesturing to a seat before her desk.
Harry sat, and the professor steepled her hands. "This meeting is to talk over any career ideas you might have and decide which subjects you would like to continue at Newt level," she stated, though Harry had figured as much from his classmates' chatter.
"Have you had any thoughts about what you would like to do after you leave here?"
Harry didn't have much of an idea.
He murmured. "Well, I thought maybe an Auror?
Or a Quidditch player, but that wasn't something to really consider unless he got scouted in sixth or seventh year." McGonagall nodded, briskly extracting a slim, dark pamphlet from the bottom of a large stack. "A difficult path, Potter," she said. "It requires 3 years of continued training and at least 5 newts, none under exceeds expectations. They also run stringent aptitude and character tests."
Harry nodded. It rather made sense they would.
"Well, you'll want to continue in Defense Against the Dark Arts, of course."
"Of course," Harry echoed.
"I would also advise transfiguration, because Aurors frequently need to transfigure or untransfigure in their duties." McGonagall peered at him over her glasses. "And I ought to tell you now, Potter, that I don't accept students with owls under exceeds expectations into my newt level classes. You're averaging about acceptable at the moment, so best put in some good hard work before the owls." She glanced at a sheet of parchment, checking it, then added, "You'll also want charms, very useful, and potions."
"Potions?"
McGonagall offered a slight smile at Harry's expression.
"Yes, Potter, I said potions. Poisons and antidotes are essential study for an Auror. You'll definitely need to study for that. Professor Snape refuses to accept students with less than an outstanding in their potions owl."
"Potions?"
"But I would think that, if you are serious in this ambition, a few weeks' worth of hard studying should bring you up to standards."
She slid the dark pamphlet across the desk, and Harry took it. Her expression softened a bit. Professor Lupin considered your defense work to be exceptional, and Professor Genkai is pleased with your progress, despite the difficulties you've had with her brand of magic.
Really?
I do believe that concludes our career consultation, the professor finished. Standing, Harry nodded politely at his head of house and turned to leave.
Harry?
Harry? He wondered, glancing back at his professor. How many times has she called me that?
I hate to say it, McGonagall warned, but after you leave, you'll be spending a considerable amount of time in the public eye. It can work both for and against you, no matter what you do. Best take that into account.
Both for and against?
Thank you, Professor, Harry responded, almost automatically.
Dismissed, then.
Harry left, puzzling over those last words.
Both for and against? Draco entered Snape's office after only a perfunctory knock. Sitting in the more comfortable of the two chairs before the professor's desk, Draco offered a winning, polite smile at the precise degree for useful people trying to backstab you.
Professor.
Mr. Malfoy. Snape leaned back in his chair, hands carefully positioned in a skilled dueler's pose, no visible tension, with unblocked, quick access to his wand.
We are here to discuss your career options and select those subjects you should continue in 6th and 7th years. You're no doubt going to tend the Malfoy fortune, as is proper, Draco murmured.
Snape nodded.
Therefore, I recommend that you select classes based on your results and interests.
I will take your advice under consideration, Draco responded.
Very good. Dismissed.
Sit down, Mr. Giganchi, Professor McGonagall said, gesturing to a seat before her desk.
He sat, and the professor sat back.
This meeting is to talk over any career ideas you might have and decide which subjects you would like to continue at Newt level, she stated, with a thin hint of speaking by rote in her voice. Professor Genkai says she gave you the relevant information on converting the credits here to your educational system. Have you read it?
Hiei raised an eyebrow.
No. The professor blinked.
Do you have any thoughts on a career despite that?
I don't need a job.
I see.
McGonagall adjusted her glasses. Unless you are independently wealthy, Giganchi.
I am, Hiei said flatly.
He could steal, hunt, defend himself, and find places to sleep safely. That was good enough. If he wanted to live luxuriously, he could hire out as a mercenary.
McGonagall let herself look stunned for only a split second before rallying gracefully.
Regardless, it would be best to have options, Giganchi, in case you become bored or, Merlin forbid, lose your fortune. What do you see yourself doing in the future?
Hiei stared.
Surviving was all the answer he could think of. The professor waited several minutes until it became evident that Hiei wasn't going to answer.
Let's try a different approach then, she said briskly, picking up a sheet of parchment.
Your best grades are in Defense Against the Dark Arts, Potions, Care of Magical Creatures, and, she grimaced faintly,
Divination.
You are doing adequately in Charms, Transfiguration, and Herbology. She thought for a long moment, eyes trailing over the pamphlet spread over her enlarged desk.
Have you considered working with dragons?
No.
Other dangerous beasts?
No.
Your ministry's department for the regulation and control of magical creatures?
No.
Perhaps a temple guard, or
no.
Cursebreaker?
No.
Auror?
No.
McGonagall sighed.
I strongly recommend that you consider some options, Giganchi. As it is, though, I can only recommend that you continue in those courses you receive an exceed expectations or better in, and try to take between 6 and 9.
Hiei nodded sullenly, and she added, feel free to speak to me or Genkai if you have any questions.
After another minute without a response, she said,
dismissed.
It wasn't until several days after Snape had begun the Slytherin career talks that Kurama got called in. "Ten Galleon says he booted me to the end of the list," Kurama thought wryly. "Pity I don't know anyone fool enough to take that bet. I could use the money." He knocked politely on the door and waited until Snape bid him enter, then edged past the shelves and jars to stand before Snape's desk. After a moment, during which Snape didn't bother pretending to be busy, he snapped, "Well, sit down, Minamino." Kurama did, and Snape continued, "We will not pretend that you don't know why you are here. Assuming you have read the materials Professor Genkai gave you, what careers might you possibly be considering?" Kurama didn't smile. "I was thinking of being a gardener," he replied easily. Snape blinked, completely taken aback. Then, "You mean an herbologist?" "No," Kurama corrected. "I will not be smug at him, I will not be smug at him. I mean a gardener, or a landscape architect, if that term is more to your liking." Kurama quickly stifled the impulse to be overtly less than polite to Snape. He was being vindictive enough with his preferred career. "A muggle gardener?" Snape asked, unsuccessfully covering shock with sneering. "Not entirely," Kurama admitted. "But one who can work in both worlds, yes. I'd like to try something new. Though I'll stay in herbology." Under Snape's astonished stare, Kurama added, "Do you know what someone would pay for a well-designed garden in Japan, magical or muggle?" Snape managed to reply, "No." "You'd be surprised, I'm sure," Kurama thought for a moment. "I suppose I'll have to continue in charms and transfiguration and potions, of course. One wouldn't want a misoriented garden. So, arithmancy and runes, do you suppose?" He didn't wait for an answer. "And I think I'll continue in history. It's really quite an interesting class." "You will require an exceeds expectations minimum for all those courses," Snape said, a muscle near his eye twitching violently. "And," he added quickly, nastily, "I require an outstanding for admittance to potions." "Excellent," Kurama replied, smiling politely. "That shouldn't be too difficult, except in charms. Thank you for your time, Professor. I'll just let myself out, if I'm dismissed." Snape gave him a baleful glare. "You are." "Thank you." Kurama bowed slightly, hiding his amusement, and left. By the end of May, several hours of lingering after-dinner sunshine enticed students from the library, beckoning with promises of timeless, endless days before owls. Hiei wasn't fooled, but he also wasn't willing to lock himself away inside to study, so he spent his evenings with his books and notes on the castle roofs. Sometimes Kurama slipped upstairs to study with him, practicing charms and hexes that worked best on a second person, but always he grew restless and left after just an hour or two. This particular Thursday, with little more than 2 weeks left to review, he picked a sun-warmed stretch of rooftop overlooking an empty courtyard near the infirmary. Most of the school tended towards the wide, sunny lawns on the far side of the castle, near the Quidditch pitch, so in this place, away from both lawn and the direct routes to the various dorms, he could study in peace. He dug sugar quills from his pocket and sucked on them as he slowly worked through the note packet on transfiguration theory. 6 quills, 1 chocolate frog, and 2 cross-references later, movement in the courtyard caught his eye. Hiei stilled, falling silent as Yukina lowered herself to sit on the lip of the courtyard fountain. She folded her hands in her lap, gazing down at the moss-lined stones near her feet, a tiny smile hovering about her mouth. That's not her usual smile. What is that expression? Hiei wondered. Yukina raised her head and turned, looking directly at Hiei with that strange little smile still playing about her lips. "Please come down, Oni-san." It wasn't a request. Hiei slid down the roof and swung to the ground. Yukina gestured towards the fountain seat, eyes kind but request undeniable. Hiei hesitated only a moment before acceding to it, taking a perch somewhat farther along the lip of the fountain than she'd indicated, and Yukino returned to her contemplation of the flagstones. Moments passed, with Yukino pondering in gentle silence, and Hiei shifted uncomfortably. What did she want with him? He was just her fake brother, as far as she was concerned. Right? A tiny hitch in Yukina's breathing alerted Hiei, so he wasn't startled when she spoke.
Back in March, you knew I was ill.
As if Hiei could forget, he didn't answer.
And we both know why, she added, which means you've long since figured out when it'll happen next.
Her eyes flicked to him. Right? Hiei shrugged in affirmation. Why bother denying it? Yukina's eyes flicked away again, the little smile returning. She unconsciously lifted one slim hand, accustomed to holding a fan that could politely hide her emotions better, clutching it to her chest as if it held such a fan.
I've asked Kazuma to stand guard.
Hiei's head snapped up. What? He thought, biting back his immediate response. Is that sane? Wise? Prudent? He asked instead, voice tight.
Probably not, Yukina admitted, her faint smile vanishing. But Hiei, he's human.
No kidding, Hiei thought, waiting for her to continue.
Even if he lives a long, full life, even with a wizard's lifespan, we'll only have a century at best.
Hiei had been quite aware of that. A century to them was like only 4 years to the teenagers they were pretending to be. But why are you telling me this? He asked. I don't need to know this. I don't want to. Yukina.
You aren't my peer, but I'd like to ask you, as family, to be there.
The air stuck in Hiei's throat.